In the first chapter of his letter to the Christians in Rome, St. Paul wrote, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and wickedness of men, who by their wickedness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them, because God has shown it to them. Ever since the creation of the world, his invisible nature, namely his eternal power and deity, have been clearly perceived in the things that have been made." This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for the After Dinner Scholar, Wyoming Catholic College's weekly podcast about the great books and the liberal arts. History bears out the truth of St. Paul's statement, "You don't need a Bible to know that God or the gods exist, that they're eternal, powerful, intelligent, just, and creative. We all live on the same planet, see the same nature, and are able to come to the same obvious conclusions, even though some don't." Nevertheless, Christianity is not a nature religion. It is a revealed religion. God has spoken through the words of the inspired writers of Scripture and through the Church. Where are the boundaries between what humans can understand about God through reason and what then requires revelation? Professor Kyle Washit has been discussing this subject with our Wyoming Catholic College sophomores using St. Thomas Aquinas's Compendium Theologiae. Professor Washit is our guest on this edition of the After Dinner Scholar. To begin with, tell us about Thomas's compendium. What is it and why do we teach that?
So the story is that Aquinas was working on the Summa Theologiae and the various other works of commenting on theology. And folks found that that was maybe a little advanced for the average reader, even though the Summa had been intended, as Aquinas said, for beginners. His beginners were a lot further down the beginning line than most of us are. So he had written the compendium, as he called it, as a little word, a short word that'd be intended as an introduction to the three, what he said were the three main parts of the Christian life, faith, hope, and love. He only finished the section on faith, but it still is a kind of helpful introduction to the thought of Aquinas for beginners, for undergraduates. And our judgment, the Summa Theologiae is really best for graduate students. We can do some excerpts here and there, but the compendium, you get a nice comprehensive view of all of the articles of faith contained in the creed, with Aquinas giving short, punchy arguments without maybe all of the elaborate details that generally accompany the Summa.
Well, and without the sort of formal style of the Summa, you know, objection one, objection two, objection three, but I say...
Exactly. Even that scholastic style can be a bit off-putting, where yes. You just get a paragraph, here's a short, clear argument, you learn how to parse scholastic ease, nevertheless, because they're written in terse scholastic prose, but yeah, as you said, without the barrier of what an article is and all that structure.
Mm-hmm. Well, Thomas begins with the assertion that God is, that is, that God exists. And he tells us, quote, "This is a truth clearly known by reason." How does reason tell us about God?
Yeah. So this is the thing that's startling for the students, I think. We come in thinking, well, of course we know God is by faith. And that Aquinas has utter confidence that we know God exists by reason. Not just because of arguments about, well, the world's so beautiful, there must be a cause. But a very detailed... what he thinks is a undoubtable demonstration of the existence of God. Now, the key that he gets there is it's not, he stresses, all of the things we believe about God. It doesn't get us to the Trinity. Mm-hmm. But it gets us, he argues, to a one, immaterial, eternal, necessary being. I think all of that results from an argument from reason. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, he has a whole list. I mean, he goes through, there are 35 chapters before he gets to, well, and at this point, reason poops out and you have to have something else.
Right.
And what are all those things about God?
So by the end of those 35 chapters, we know not only is there only one God, that he's immaterial, that he's necessary, that he's changeless, that he's eternal, that he has every perfection that we see in the world in a more perfect way, that he is also a who. He has an intellect and a will. And you get all of that starting from the fact that things move. That's where Aquinas goes. We see things fall, and at the end of this chain of reasoning, we conclude there's an intellectual being that everyone would recognize is what we call God.
Is that still a viable line of argument in our world today?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The argument in the compendium just starts with things move, there must be a mover, and we go back to an unmoved mover along those lines. Now, the students come in initially thinking, well, things don't need a mover because we now know there's inertia, we now know modern physics, we now know all of these things. And the reality is, it doesn't change Aquinas's argument. The presence of inertia, we don't need to deny the presence of inertia. The presence of Newtonian or Einsteinian physics also doesn't change. Aquinas's argument is very simple. If something moves, it's moved by another. If something is being moved, it's moved by another. It's like if we are driving down the highway and we look up and we see a train car going down. You don't think, oh, that train car is self-propelled. You think there's something pushing or pulling that train car. And then Aquinas says, and the thing that's pushing or pulling that train car is either another train car or is something that is the engine. And so you say there's either moved movers, but every moved mover receives its power to move from another mover. And he said, well, that can't go on forever. Because if you're a moved mover, by definition, you're getting your motion from somewhere else. Yeah, a way of thinking about that would be if you think of a hanging lamp with the chain, various loops in a chain, you can't say, oh, they're just an eternal or an infinite string of chain links. Like, no, the very notion of a chain link is it has to ultimately be hanging from something, from some first that's different. Just like with the train cars, there needs to be an ultimate first that's moving the train cars. Aquinas says, given that, and that's true for local motion, that's true for any change, given that, you have to go back to some first mover. Now, what that first mover is not clear at the beginning, but through the next 35 arguments, you conclude that first mover is the thing we call God.
Mm-hmm. Now, in chapter 36, Thomas writes, quote, "But there are other truths about God revealed to us in the teaching of the Christian religion, which are beyond the reach of the philosophers." How is that the case?
So the initial arguments for the existence of God go from, all right, because things move, they need a mover. What's this mover like? And Aquinas masterfully unfolds all the conclusions we can get. But all of those arguments are sort of starting from something that's not God, right? We're starting from apples falling or water boiling or whatever the case may be. And we say, all right, all of that leads us back to a being that we're aware exceeds the ability of our speech and our thought. Because everything else we talk about is something that gets its being, gets its power to move from something else. But this thing that we're calling God does not receive that. It just has it in itself. And so then you realize, wow, the way I talk, the way I think about reality, it's all conditioned by caused things, not uncaused things. And we get this transcendent reality. Great, incredible, amazing, but there's not, in the end, it's sort of a black box. Because we've gone from, it's not like these things, though it causes these things. What happens with Christianity is that God tells us from inside his own life who he is. So God is not Father, Son, and Spirit. We can't know he's Father, Son, and Spirit because we see apples fall or things change color. That is a mystery in the inner life of God. And the only way we could possibly know that is if he told us, as if he were telling his friends, about what's going on inside. Mm-hmm. And that's Christian revelation.
And what are some of those truths? Obviously, the Trinity.
So the Trinity is the key one, right? Fundamentally, and those things that are going to follow from the Trinity. So the fact that he is Father, Son, and Spirit really is the main goal of what we get for, say, the first semester of our sophomores. God is eternally in a relation of persons. He's one. He's uncaused. That's great. But when we look into his inner life, we see there's this relation of three persons springing forth eternally in a way that doesn't contradict all of the things we know by reason, but would exceed those. Beyond that, then you start asking, well, then what does God do in relation to this world? God creates. God creates specifically in time. Again, Aquinas will argue that we couldn't know that God created in time unless he told us, because that would be a choice that he made before we were around. Right? If he didn't tell us otherwise, we'd assumed he could always be creating, for example. And then we start going further into the human history of what are other mysteries that God, from his inner life, reveals to us. Well, that we were created in a state of grace, that we fell, and that he, one of those divine persons that we know by revelation, became a man and redeemed us. All of that flowing from this inner life of Father, Son, and Spirit, we couldn't possibly know unless God told us.
Now, at the same time, I don't think St. Thomas would think too highly of the old fundamentalist adage, God said it, I believe it, that settles it.
Right, exactly. So here's the next thing that Aquinas is going to be really clear on. We don't want to say the God that I've come to believe, because he told me, is a different God than the God that I proved had to exist because things change. Because the God who tells me about his inner life is the same God causing the reality all around us. So if that's the case, and God, the reason I believe what God tells me about his inner life is because he's the cause of all truth, the source of all truth, and cannot deceive or be deceived, well then, everything he does in reality cannot be deceptive. It has to be telling us about who he is. And so that the God that the philosophers discover is the same God as the one revealed in Jesus Christ, even if they don't know it. But that means, as a result, you can't say the truths that we're able to deduce from the reality of the world around us have no bearing in who we know about God. God wants us to know about him through the world he's made. As St. Paul says, the world testifies to its creator. Those truths have to be in harmony with what God tells us. So, in fact, Aquinas will use this as a helpful check on certain key heresies. If God starts revealing something that seems utterly contrary to what reason says, that's a good sign that either I've misunderstood the revelation or that it's not God telling me it.
An evangelical friend of mine went on an utter rant in an article that he wrote about how without that stuff about God that you can know simply by reason, that everyone can know simply by reason, you create a box for yourself that's very problematic and dangerous. Because if nothing is natural, then nothing is unnatural.
And then what you end up with in that situation is that the thing that makes something good or bad is what the strong man says, and God turns into the biggest bully on the block.
How does studying Thomas challenge and encourage our students?
So the initial thing that happens for the students is a kind of purifying of their imagination about the God they've been praying to and are in real relationship to. Because sort of the things that Aquinas will Some of the things Aquinas will say about this God seem to be utterly impossible for us to get our mind completely around. That God is pure act, for example. Like, well, what's that mean? Right? That God is, he doesn't have emotions, he doesn't change, he's just eternally perfect being.
The one I have trouble wrapping my head around is God is simple.
Right, right. That there's, even when I say, oh, God is just, justice is not different from God in God. Like, he just is. And all of those perfections are him without any composition. Well, the problem is our minds aren't designed to think about things like that. Because everything else we know about is full of composition. It has color, it has shape, it has size. It moves, it changes. Like, that's the world we live in, and our language is constructed on that. So even just the sentence, God is, seems to imply there's this thing over here called God, and there's this thing over here called is, and I put them together in a sentence. Aquinas says, oh no, in God, this thing over here called God and being, they're the same thing, even though with our words we have to split apart. Well, you start going down that, and the God that emerges so transcends the limits of our minds, is so, in a way, unthinkable, like we're touching the very edge of who he is. There becomes this immediate conflict of, wait, if God is so transcendent, what have I been doing being in a relationship of prayer and listening to what he tells me and going to Mass and having this experience? Are those not true? And the answer is no, you've got to say those are true. But what you're in an experience kind of like Moses' experience. The God of the burning bush really spoke to him. He really gave him his name. He was really present to him through Egypt. But then when Moses gets to Sinai, at the top of Sinai is this dark, impenetrable cloud. And he enters into it without knowing what he's getting into. The transcendence of God on Sinai doesn't negate the real fact that God was present to Moses through the travels in Egypt. But it does let Moses know, oh, there's something completely other. I need to go even further in understanding who this God is. And that's the experience, ideally, our students are going to have.
Last year, I bought a copy of Thomas's compendium to read one chapter a day as part of my morning devotions. It was wonderful, intellectually stimulating, and spiritually refreshing. And I've recommended the practice to others, and let me recommend it to you as well. The translation of the compendium our students use is produced by the Aquinas Institute, bound with other works in a volume entitled Opuscula Unum, Treatises. It's available at aquinasinstitute.org. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.